Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And special thanks to our sponsors, Humboldt Distillery. You can find their delicious organic spirits in your local grocery store. And special thanks to Dandar's Board Games and Books, based in Arcata. If you're looking for a fun family night, go to Dandar's. They'll hook you up. Joining me are two of my favorite people, Jen Kalt, Director of Humboldt Baykeeper. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Tom.
And Alicia Heyman of Friends of the Eel River. Hey, Alicia.
Hi, Tom.
And today we're going to talk about a subject that I am not terribly familiar with. I have to admit at the start of the show that people often ask me, is it safe to eat fish that we catch off of the coast here, these near shore waters? And the answer is generally yes, with a few exceptions. And we have an actual expert who will help us understand what those exceptions are. And our guest today is Ross Taylor, fisheries consultant and avid fisherman. Hey, Ross.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Alicia. Hi, Jen.
Welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us. Ross is Humboldt Baykeeper's primary consultant on a mercury study concerning fish caught off of shore here off of Humboldt County. And Ross has been instrumental to the project, researching which fish to eat, sampling protocols, and even catching a lot of these fish. So let's get started at the beginning. Let's go through some of the background. How did this, and this is a question for both Ross and Jen, how did you get into studying this area, and why are we studying this problem, mercury in fish? Jen.
Well, we started studying mercury in fish locally because in 2012, the state did a study of coastal fish throughout the state of California, and they found the highest mercury levels in leopard shark from Humboldt Bay. And because there's no known local source of mercury, a lot of us thought, whoa, what is going on there? And so we were fortunate to get a grant from the California Environmental Protection Agency, Cal EPA. They offer environmental justice grants to study these kinds of questions where people are being exposed to mercury in fish. So our first study looked at fish from Humboldt Bay, fish that were commonly caught from kayaks in the bay or the jetties. And we are just wrapping up our second study, which looks at fish caught just offshore.
And the first study that was completed in 2018 was focused on the bay, I think because it was Humboldt Baykeeper. And so we wanted to further the study of fish commonly caught by people in Humboldt Bay. And that's where the leopard sharks were caught in the original 2012 study that the state performed. And so we sampled a number of different fish that are commonly caught by fishermen or fisher people within Humboldt Bay, both from boats, jetties, the different docks within town, with the idea that we wanted to test the mercury levels in fish that people commonly catch and eat from the bay itself. And there's a pretty diverse group of people that fish from the bay and eat those fish for food.
Now we are on to our second study. So let's talk a little bit about that first study. What did we find in that first study? What are mercury levels like in commonly eaten fish from Humboldt Bay?
We sampled a couple more leopard shark, and it confirmed that leopard shark of a legal size, which is a 36-inch minimum length, are high in mercury, high enough that they're recommended that no one eats them. Typically, mercury studies look at different age groups of people as far as the thresholds of mercury level, with women of childbearing age and children having a lower threshold than adult men and women. We found California halibut in the bay were fairly low in mercury. A species of surf perch that people commonly catch were low in mercury. And then we looked at a few other fish species, such as bat rays, which I don't think they're that commonly eaten once we talked to people. And they were kind of a moderately high in mercury. And we also tested some of the clams that are harvested out of the bay by both recreational fishers as well as the Wiat tribe. And they were very low in mercury. And we also sampled or tested some of the commercially grown oysters within Humboldt Bay, and they were also very low in mercury.
All right, so generally good news coming out of Humboldt Bay for commonly eaten fish species. Let's talk about this second study. You looked at a variety of different species again. How many different types of fish did you catch, and how many total samples did you bring into the study?
moving offshore to the ocean was really a response from that bay study, where a lot of people that run their boats out of Trinidad and Eureka wanted to know about the different rockfish species mainly caught off the coast. So in the second study, we collected tissue samples from 9 different species, and we had a total of 70 tissue samples that were tested for mercury. We tested lingcod, we tested cabazon, vermilion rockfish, copper rockfish, quillback rockfish, canary rockfish, boccaccio, and we also tested Pacific halibut, and we tested some additional California halibut from the bay in the second study as well. And our main goal in the second study was to have at least 9 tissue samples per species, because that's the minimum sample size for updating state health advisories for consumption of fish.
Why study mercury in the first place? What is the problem with mercury?
Well, mercury is a neurotoxin, and it's especially harmful to children and developing fetuses. And so it's really important for pregnant and breastfeeding women to know that they're eating low mercury fish. The good news about mercury is that once you change what you're eating, your mercury levels will go down within about 3 months. So that's different than, say, dioxins and PCBs, which we did not test as part of this study. Those are more of a permanent body burden in your fat tissue. So mercury levels, you can actually change what you're going to be passing on to a developing fetus. And so this is really important for our people who are planning to have children or just found out that they were pregnant. And then especially for people with young children who eat a lot of fish, we have a lot of local residents who eat a ton of fish, way more than the average American. And so some of those people are tribal members. Like, for example, wild Chinook salmon is so low in mercury that it's safe to eat 28 times a month. And a lot of people kind of raise their eyebrows or laugh, but tribal members often do eat salmon that often, if it's possible, if they can get the salmon. That's a whole nother radio show.
One thing that I found really interesting about the guidelines that were developed as a result of these studies is that they kind of speak to the importance of knowing the source of your fish and even like catching your own. And in particular, what I'm thinking about is the specification of what size fish correlates with what kind of recommendation. Can you guys speak to that and why the size of the fish matters?
Sure. So methylmercury, which is the neurotoxin, it bioaccumulates in fish, well, in any animal species that ingests that mercury. So older, longer-lived fish are going to accumulate more mercury, and it's also where a fish is feeding on the food chain. So, for example, lingcod are a pretty top-level predator on our reef systems off our shore, and they're a fairly long-lived fish species, and they even consume a lot of the rockfish that themselves are high in mercury. So anytime a lingcod ingests, let's say, a China rockfish or a quillback rockfish that's high in mercury, it's taking that mercury load on itself. And we realized that from some previous studies that we read before we designed our study. And one thing that we really wanted to do with both lingcod and Pacific halibut was catch a wide range of sizes so we could look at relationships between fish length and levels of methylmercury. And we ran some fairly common statistical models, analyses, to determine, is there a correlation between fish length and methylmercury? And our data shows yes for lingcod and Pacific halibut. Fish length, i.e. size, and thus age, is correlated positively to levels of methylmercury.
So basically, if you have a choice, let's say you're going to the Woodley Island Marina to buy some locally caught albacore, pick the smaller fish. That's generally the wise thing to do. Or if you're buying a whole fish anywhere, pick the smaller fish, because the smaller they are, the less mercury they will have. It's often thought that canned tuna is something that's very high in mercury, and that can be true for these really big old fish that are caught in Asian waters. But the locally caught albacore are much younger fish typically. And so you'll see you can actually buy low mercury canned tuna that's produced, that's locally caught albacore, And that's just presumably the smaller fish. They put in a separate can and call it low mercury, but they do a lot of testing of that as well.
We're starting to tease some of the results of this most recent study, so maybe we should just get directly into it. So, Jen, I will give the interpretation of the study results question to you, which is, do we have good news or bad news from this study?
We have both good news and bad news. It's mostly good news, which is great because fish is a really healthy source of protein. It's really good for your heart health and your brain. There's lots of omega-3s, and it's also very low in fat. So it's a really good protein as long as it's low in mercury. We actually have a one pager that shows you the recommendations based on the state guidelines as far as what levels of mercury we found, and that's posted on our website. But the short version is that Dungeness crab, California halibut, black rock fish, these are all fairly low in mercury. And those are safe for women of childbearing age and children to eat 2 to 3 times a week. So that's pretty frequently. The bad news, besides the sharks and a lot of the other rockfish, the bad news is that really big, well, I don't know if you'd call over 10 pounds a really big lingcod, Ross. Is that a really big or is that just a moderate? Anyway.
That's moderate.
Lingcod over 10 pounds or 28 inches long should be avoided completely by women of childbearing age and children. So people who are catching a lot of fish and eating a lot of fish, feeding it to their families or their friends, they tend to eat the whole fish and they tend to freeze the fish and can it and eat it all year. And we did actually interview a Shelter Cove fisherman who had mercury poisoning from eating, I think he was eating canned rockfish 4 or 5 times a week. And he started getting like tingling in his fingertips and having like fatigue. And his doctor tested his hair and his blood for mercury and told him to change what he was eating. And sure enough, he got rid of a lot of that mercury in his body. So that's the bad news really for a lot of people, because a lot of people love eating lingcod.
So our results show that small lingcod, fish less than 28 inches in length and under 10 pounds, can be consumed once per week by women and children, or up to 3 times per week for adult, that's women over 45 and adult men. When you get into lingcod between 10 to 20 pounds, our results show that women and children should avoid those fish, and adults can eat a meal per week. And then our studies showed that lingcod, which I would consider large, over 35 inches or greater than 20 pounds in weight, should be avoided. Those fish were all well above what the EPA and other health agencies say is the threshold for do not consume, which is 1.31 parts per million of mercury in the fish tissue. And getting back to some, what I think is the really good news of this study is both the California halibut and the Pacific halibut were quite low in mercury, including some fairly large Pacific halibut, upwards of 50 pounds, were still within a range where women and children can consume one meal per week and other adults could eat it twice a week. And that's a really popular fishery off our coast for Pacific halibut. And then California halibut in the Bay are also very sought after species of fish in Humboldt Bay. And they are relatively low in mercury, especially when you compare them to the rockfish and the lingcod species.
Well, I was just going to play off of that. I would be remiss if I didn't mention Lake Pillsbury at all in this conversation, where actually the average mercury testing of fish, I think largemouth bass in the reservoir, is at 1.31 parts per million, which Ross just said is a level to be avoided.
The Eco News Report, and joining us is Ross Taylor, fisheries consultant and avid fisherman. And we're talking about mercury levels in fish caught off of Humboldt's coast.
Can we talk a little bit about where this mercury comes from, other sources, how some of it is natural, and like where's it coming from?
Well, basically, there is elemental mercury in rocks. And when coal is burned, however, it spews mercury into the atmosphere and it's deposited all over the planet in rain and especially in fog, it turns out. Fog concentrates mercury even more than rain. And then it becomes biologically available or methylated as it's in the mud either of a reservoir or Humboldt Bay. And so generally, the same is true about the bass in Ruth Lake. They're very high in mercury, and they're considered unsafe to eat. And that's generally true in reservoirs throughout California. I think Ross did a lot of studies, a lot of work on that in the High Sierra. Is that right?
I did some trout testing over in the Eastern Sierras, but I've also done work with largemouth bass, both in Lake Berryessa and Clear Lake. And it's a similar situation where those lakes are very high in mercury because they also mine mercury next to those lakes. And there's still open pit mines that basically when it rains, mercury and sediments leach into the lake. And then that mercury methylates when it's in the lake and becomes the toxic form that smaller insects, invertebrates pick up. They get eaten by smaller fish. Those fish get eaten by bigger fish. Those fish get eaten by the bass. So you'll see bass as a pretty high level fish for methylmercury in many western states because of those reasons. And getting back to the fog drip and the atmospheric, a lot of it seems to be hitting our coast from Asian countries that burn coal to generate electricity. And we read some recent stuff on both China and India, the amount of electricity they've produced as their middle class population has increased has generated tremendous amounts of mercury in the atmosphere that basically blows to the West Coast and drops out along our coast and ends up in our watersheds and our near ocean waters.
We should also say that the mercury mines that were developed in a lot of areas like the Russian River and Clear Lake and whatnot, that mercury was used in gold mining. And that is a source of mercury in the Klamath and Trinity, maybe Trinity, not totally sure, and the Russian River for sure, but it was not known to have been used in gold mining in either the Mad or the Eel River, which is thought to be the main source of sediment into Humboldt Bay. So we don't know of any local mercury source that would be something that we could actually control, but this deposition of atmospheric mercury is increasing apparently over the past couple decades. And so I'm not sure what we can really do about that, except for make people aware of what mercury levels are in the local fish so they can reduce their exposure. It is the main way people are exposed to mercury in the U.S. is through eating fish. So you're totally safe, Tom.
Yeah, as long as it's not in broccoli, I'm all right. This might be a question better fielded to an environmental chemist, but we can imagine a future where coal energy production doesn't exist. China, although they're currently continuing to build coal power plants, they are massively investing in renewable energy production, and they themselves have plans to drop coal from their portfolio in the future. Without coal-fired power plants and atmospheric deposition, will this mercury in Humboldt Bay in our coastal waters, will it ever go away, or is this a problem that we will have in perpetuity?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that we may not learn for a long time because Japan has announced plans to build 40 some odd new coal-fired power plants to replace all the nuclear power plants they shut down after the big Fukushima disaster. But a lot of the sources of mercury and the way it is methylated in the environment is actually not totally known. There was a study I was surprised to find in the South Fork Eel River that found that mercury is being methylated in the water column. And it seems exacerbated by warmer temperatures and more algae in the river itself, because that algae has bacteria on it that is methylating the mercury. And so there are so many different rabbit holes to go down on the mercury issue. It seems to be affected by the amount of fresh water coming into a system as well. So melting glaciers in Alaska seem to be causing more methylation. So there's a lot we don't know and a lot that I certainly don't know.
Yeah, I cannot give you a definitive answer to that question, but I can tell you that many of the rockfish species that are moderately high to very high in methylmercury can live upwards of 40 to 60 to 80 years. So there could be fish out there now that are 10, 20 years old that are still going to be catchable for decades to come. And they're going to bioaccumulate mercury all along the way. I don't think we're going to see any significant drops just from coal-fired electrical plants for a while.
So watch what you eat. That's probably the best way that we can deal with this problem is by consuming less, not by changing the environmental inputs of mercury into our ecosystems.
Exactly. And I think our study, too, is really focused on people that is information. Well, it's information for anybody that eats fish, but it's also information for people that catch their own fish or receive fish from somebody who fishes. Because, again, getting back to fish size is really important. If you go to a market and buy a piece of lingcod, you don't have any information on the size of that fish that you're going to consume. But if your neighbor's giving you fish or you're going out fishing and you're targeting a certain size of fish based on knowledge of our results, then you can eat more wisely with more knowledge of what you're consuming or providing to your family or your children.
So I know that all of the different fish species and their sizes might be confusing to get over the radio. I am not an auditory processor. I would be completely lost by this conversation and would have no idea what to eat. Thankfully, though, the guide, the friendly guide that has been produced by Humboldt Baykeeper, is available on the show's website, which you can find the show notes on thelostcoastoutpost.com. So if you're hearing this, go to the Lost Coast Outpost and you can find the notes there. And it is also available on the Humboldt Baykeeper website at humboldtbaykeeper.org. So check those out. But if you're trying to perhaps have an easy rule of thumb for yourself, salmon looks like it's good to go. Other fish, your rockfish, be a little bit suspect. And lingcod, particularly bad the bigger they get. Is that a good general summation? And shellfish is cool, good to eat.
Yeah, shellfish is particularly low in mercury because they're filter feeders. Another good rule of thumb is just basically that Pacific halibut and California halibut are better choices than rockfish. There are some exceptions. Like I said, black rockfish is fairly low in mercury and the canary rockfish is safe to eat somewhat. But the other rockfish, yes, they're... And why is that, Ross? They're longer-lived fish and they're bottom feeders? Or why are rockfish so high in mercury?
Well, it's their longevity. So the species such as vermilions, coppers, and quillbacks tend to be a longer lived rockfish and they feed more benthic or on the bottom. Because the 2012 report that the state did, they actually looked at rockfish sizes amongst the different species, and they showed that black rockfish, which we've mentioned several times, canary rockfish, and also blue rockfish are more midwater pelagic type feeders, and they're eating different organisms and they tend to not amass a load of methylmercury within their bodies. So again, black rockfish, blues, and canaries are probably the favored choice if you like to consume rockfish.
And so all this isn't to say that we shouldn't eat fish as well, because fish are healthy for us in other ways too, right? They have omega-3s, which are good for our brain and for our heart. It's just important that we choose the things that aren't going to slowly poison us. So Ross, I understand that you also tested for something else. Selenium, is that right?
Yes, we tested for selenium. It's a trace element that's actually essential for brain function, but too much selenium can be toxic as well. But there's been a number of studies as early as the 1970s to the current where people have looked at the ability of selenium to protect against methylmercury toxicity. Basically, at a high level, the selenium basically bonds to the mercury or the methylmercury and renders it inert. And there's been a lot of papers looking at molar ratios, which is sort of a chemical mass or weight of selenium versus mercury. And some studies indicate if you have a molar mass or ratio of selenium that's higher than the mercury in a tissue sample, it would theoretically protect you from any toxic effects of mercury. So we obtained some extra funding from the Humboldt Area Saltwater Anglers, plus we used some of our budget to test 30 of our 70 samples for selenium as well, and calculate the molar mass of selenium and methylmercury in those 30 fish. And then we looked at the molar ratios, and our results, I would say, were inconclusive, and a lot of the other peer-reviewed journals that we read seemed inconclusive, mainly because it's really difficult to develop guidelines that people can follow that are clear and concise to give them good information on what to consume or what not to consume. And probably the biggest stumbling block with the selenium to methylmercury ratio is you would need to know the selenium and the methylmercury of the fish you ate before you ate it, which is just not a feasible thing to do. So most of the peer-reviewed journals and scientists at this point have been very reluctant to base any health advisories on selenium to methylmercury ratios.
Yeah, so what you're saying is we need like at-home testing kits to test the fish before you eat them.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that selenium levels don't vary as much to fish size and age. And so a lot of the recommendations were still to avoid those larger, older fish because selenium levels tend to remain static, whereas in those larger, older fish, the methylmercury levels are going to rise and the ratio is going to drop to one or below one. And in fact, in the 8 lingcod we did test, 25% of them had a molar ratio that was less than one, indicating that there was not enough selenium in those fish to have any binding or protective effect against the mercury, if that is even true. And one of the papers, too, also discussed that given a very sensitive population, let's say a pregnant mother or feeding young children, it can take just one high mercury fish to potentially cause some type of embryonic damage or effect. And so, again, those authors were really hesitant to try to formulate selenium guidelines, selenium to methylmercury ratio guidelines.
Holy smokes. Well, I think that that was an important framing that you just gave, Ross, that even one fish could cause issues. So everyone should take this seriously and should go to humblebaykeeper.org to find the helpful chart on how to eat safer from our ocean and from our bay. Jen, I understand that you have a lot of thank yous to give out for getting this report out. So besides Ross, who is fantastic, and thank you, Ross, for joining us on the show, who else made this report possible?
Well, Jeff Stackhouse, who is the captain at Stackhouse Guide Service, and Lenya Quinn Davidson caught some of the fish. Ross and a bunch of his lovely assistants caught the rest of the fish. And we also had funding from the Sirius Fund at Trees Foundation. And as Ross said, the Humboldt Area Saltwater Anglers contributed to the selenium study, which we thought was important because Jeff Stackhouse is also the livestock advisor for the UC Cooperative Extension, and he knew that local cattle have selenium deficiency. And so we thought that it would be important to test the fish for selenium. And so we needed additional funding for that. But ultimately, huge thanks to California Environmental Protection Agency that funded this project, as well as our first project, looking at mercury levels in Humboldt Bay fish. And they are a fantastic agency that they made it really easy and they were very flexible to the changes we had to make during this god-awful past year and a half we've had. So thanks to them for being really patient and flexible and helpful.
And one last time, thanks to Ross for joining the Eco News Report today. And thank you to you, our dear listeners, for joining us as well. This has been another issue of the Eco News Report. Join us at this time and channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California. And check out the Eco News Report as a podcast. You can find us on your favorite podcast app. So if you want to go back and re-listen to this show, hit us up there, leave us a review. It's always helpful. We are also in the running for the Best Local Podcast Award at the North Coast Journal. Take a minute, go online and vote for us. We'd really appreciate it. This is a labor of love on behalf of Friends of the Eel River, Humboldt Bay Keeper, the North Coast Environmental Center, and EPIC. So we could use your help and support. Thanks again and have a great day.